And when this referendum for $48 million came, I thought I'd update my data, and I just about fell off my chair. This is what I found, that the school district peaked its enrollment in 1998. We now have 617 fewer students. Regarding elementary enrollment, it peaked in 1995. We are down by 1,684 students. High school is peaking this year, so we are definitely a district in decline. Regarding Leopold Elementary School, I charted the enrollment in that school over time. It peaked in 2001 with 675 students. It has a capacity of 655. I don't know if that's before or after the addition was put on. I haven't gotten the school district to verify that. I'm still waiting for that answer. That means that when they build the school, if that referendum is passed in 2007 and 8, they will be building a school for 32 students over capacity. And if past history is any indication, every school that they added additions to in the 90s have peaked and are now in decline. Thank you.
Putting this down, because I know that I appreciate the volume and quality of information that all of you have taken the time to relate to all of us. Basically, what I wanted to come up here and say tonight was I was going to come out pretty strong against question number one as far as building another school at another site. And I have my own reasons for that, but one of them has a lot to do with the situation that schools are facing in North Madison. And people just, I don't know, it's like a disconnect or it's some kind of flaw in policy, or maybe people just aren't paying attention, I don't know. But the fact remains that, and I told all of you on the school board, I told the superintendent, the schools in the north, on the north side of Madison are becoming more and more segregated. And I pay taxes, and I have for years. And my father paid taxes on property. And like that gentleman, Mr. Bryant, said, in the last 10 years, I'm not aware of what the mill rate actually is anymore, but I am aware of one thing. I'm aware that my assessment goes up every year. And basically, my point is we need to get things straightened out before we start spending $14.5 million. We need to straighten out some boundary lines over there, and we need to get some stuff straight with Fitchburg so their kids aren't pushing our kids out of Madison schools, where I got to ante up and build another school. And that's what I'm talking about.
Taxpayer here in Madison, and I am a very happy parent and student at Mendota Elementary, and I want to congratulate the board and the district staff for providing an outstanding quality education for my daughter. And I'm going to speak to question two and question three, since I don't have a lot of time like all the other speakers as well. When I look at the request for the revenue cap override on question two, I think something that has been lacking from this discussion in the community from the start of this referendum campaign, both on, particularly on the Get Real side, somewhat on the Kerry side, is that the revenue caps have not been as harmful for districts that are pretty much the same kinds of districts that they were when the revenue caps went into place back in the 1990s. But Madison isn't the kind of district that it was when the caps went into effect. And I do think that that was brought up in some of the question and answers earlier. This is really a choice for the community between how to keep a tax rate the community is satisfied with, maintain high-quality programs Madison has historically had, and how to deal with the challenges of an increasing high-need population. And you can't keep the programs and serve the high-need population and keep the taxes where they used to be. It's that simple. The second thing I want to say relates to question three. In the interest of disclosure, I should let folks know that I'm a school administrator for a suburban school district, where I'm responsible for technology in that district. And I can tell you that there is today a digital divide between what students in Madison can get due to budget constraints and the suburban district. Regardless of what you think about roofs, we need to pass question three to close that digital divide. Thank you.
I have to say, it's really more to the people in this room because I've already told some of you. I have something to say, and I don't know if I have enough time, but I'm assuming that everyone in this room pays Madison Metropolitan School District taxes. Is that correct?
No.
Yeah, I do. Great. Okay. Now, take a mental walk down, starting from maybe Willow Street Co-op, through the campus, around the Capitol, go all the way to Whole Foods. Look around you. Think about all that property, and that some of that is some of the most valuable property in the city. Now look at who pays property taxes there. Homeowners. Not very many. There are a few small businesses. There are a few other businesses. Then look around at yourself and your neighbor. Think about who signs your check and who supports your household. Does the business that signs your check, does it pay property taxes? For many of us in this room and in our communities, it does not. We live in a community that is largely supported by government jobs, nonprofit jobs. If you work in healthcare, it's likely that your job does not pay property tax, your business employer. My business does, but we're willing to pay more in property taxes because we recognize the value of a good education and that it's essential. There is a shortfall due to our state laws. Until the state laws change, this shortfall will multiply. Meanwhile, it is important to educate our children. It is important to think about your household and whether you too are a taxpayer-supported household and give your own household a strong amount of scrutiny before you vote against our children. Don't take it out on our kids. To help your children that are children of the fifth graders at our school. Tomorrow night, this will be auctioned off at our silent auction to help raise money for our school. Silent auctions in the past have helped pay for desks, textbooks, and screens in our school. We are not a needy school, but we do need those things. Those are basic needs. The school district has not been able to afford them. Your hands can no longer care for yourself. You want them to be well-educated. It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men, in the words of Frederick Douglass.
Of our evening is going to be dedicated to audience questions. So if you haven't already done so, please be sure to get your questions to one of our volunteers, so the volunteers can raise their hands so people know who's collecting questions. And what we'd like to do is either have you give one to a volunteer or take it to the back table. You need to be sure that you specify whom your question is intended for. We're going to try to get to everyone's questions, but we can't make any guarantees. And also, in the interest of time, what we've done is we've gone through the questions and taken out some that don't speak directly to the referenda, so we don't get sidetracked with any other issues tonight.
Okay, the first question is directed to school board members. Being a senior citizen, my concern is for people living in their own home on a fixed income. Every year, assessments go up, and on top of that, the school board has referendum again that raise our taxes. Does anyone care what hardships this causes people on fixed income?
The quality of education, the value of your home, the investment you have made in your home is dependent on our maintaining the quality of education. And in order to do that, we must have adequate resources. As several people have indicated, the students we serve are very, very different today than they were 20 years ago. And we are serving them well. I invite you to come into any of our schools if you have not been there. The money is well spent. We use our resources to make sure that kids are in small classes with adequate support staff. But that is basically at risk as the revenue caps become harder and harder for us to accommodate the needs.
Our second question is your term, binge spending. What evidence are you referring to use such a term?
Time. And the reason that I use the term bin was because I think the school board is in effect addicted to this. It's in a cycle that it's difficult to escape because as was explained, the method of budgeting and the costs that are incurred automatically exceed the revenue caps. And we should not enable that kind of unconstructive behavior.
Our next question is for both CARES and Get Real. Are you aware of any efforts by nonpartisan groups from both sides of the school funding debate to come together in looking for solutions to rising costs of public education? Regardless of the referenda vote outcome, would your organization be willing to participate in such a coalition dialogue?
We've been asked by many citizens for Madison CARES to continue on as an organization past the referenda, to bring people together, to work toward working with the legislature to change the laws for school funding. And that is something that we will discuss after May 24th and how we will approach that. I am aware, I've heard Carol talk about groups that have got together in the past throughout the state to work toward changing the laws. Personally, I am not. I don't have the specifics of those groups, but maybe she could address that after Kirby answers the question. There are people out there doing so, and there are a lot more people out there that want to do so.
I can't speak for the organization or the people who are in it. I have, in fact, been a director of a statewide organization called Independent School Board Members of Wisconsin when I was on the school board for a time thereafter, interested in educational policy, instructional practices, and so on. That phase of my life is over. I don't have a desire to get back into that again, but it might well be that other people in our organization do.
Thank you. Our next question was initially directed to CARES, but it's appropriate for the school board or Superintendent Rainwater as well. In regard to referendum question number 2, why is the request recurring or continuing?
What the recurring means, referendums are non-recurring, which means they are for 1 year only, or they are recurring. In the case of question number 2, it means that the revenue cap will be raised permanently by $7.4 million. In the case of the question, for example, for question number 3, the maintenance, it's 5 non-recurring amounts. But in the case of this, it means that you raise the revenue cap permanently by $7.4 million.
And why is it recurring? Oh, that's why it's called recurring. That's the answer to the question. Okay.
Jeff, I got 1 second. If you remember, the only other time the board has gone to referendum for the operating budget to raise the revenue cap, it was a non-recurring. It was up to $12.3 million, I believe, was the amount, for 1 year only, and then it went away. I think we spent $3.3 million of that, but that was a non-recurring. This raises $7.4 million permanently.
No, it's not human.
Thank you. Next question is for Get Real. Do you think schools should provide children with breakfast programs or after-school programs?
No.
Thank you. Next question for CARES, Get Real, and Superintendent. Is it appropriate for the MTI president to become as involved as he recently does in school board elections, educational referenda, etc.?
I'll comment because it goes back to one of Kirby's initial comments about MTI being involved in donating funds to Madison CARES. And my response is, well, yeah, the teachers should be concerned about this referenda. It's their jobs on the line. It's their programs on the line. It's their livelihood on the line. if the teachers didn't care and the union that they belonged to did not support them, then I think there would be something wrong with that. You know, you call them special interest groups, but it's really the teachers in the schools in Madison that do make it special. So I guess they are special interest.
My point is simply that it is special interest politics when you have a particular group that is benefited by an action, not necessarily the interest of the teachers is different and in some senses opposed to the interest of taxpayers. That's what I'm talking about. And you don't want to give away the decision-making capacity to an interested party. And the school board should be the referee, not a player.
Superintendent, do you want to respond to this?
I think all of us, except actually for me, as a matter of fact, in my particular job, I'm paid by taxpayer funds pretty much 24 hours a day. But for everybody else, if they're not being paid through taxpayer funds, they have the right to exercise their political views, contribute their money, or anything else. Everybody has that right, whether that be Madison Teachers Incorporated, our school board, or each one of you sitting in the audience. So, do they have the right to do that? Absolutely. So does everybody.
Thank you. Next question is for CARES and Get Real. How many school board meetings have you attended in the last 2 years? When were you last inside of an elementary school in Madison?
In the past 2 years, I probably have attended 20 or 25 school board meetings, if you count long-range planning, as a meeting. My daughter is in middle school, but the last time I was in an elementary school was last week, actually.
I don't believe I've attended a school board meeting, and I have been in a school only to vote.
Thank you. The next question is also for CARES and Get Real. I'm a student at West High School in special ed, and they don't have as much money as they used to. I think we need more money now. We can't wait until later. How will you address this issue?
More money for
special ed.
More money for special ed.
You want me to reconsider?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
I am a student at West High School in special ed, and they don't have as much money as they used to. I think we need more money now. We can't wait until later. How will you address this issue?
Well, I certainly think that the vote on May 24th is important for keeping for getting more money for all of the schools in all of the programs. I don't know about the specifics of if there are specific special ed programs that you are talking about, but I do know that we need question number two to pass in order to continue with the programs that we currently have in place. Otherwise, we're going to see cuts in existing programs and probably a decrease in spending on some of the programs that you may be referring to. I know some of the special ed funding is mandated by the state, so I don't know. Without more specifics of the programming or what you're referring to, it's hard to get into a more specific answer. I'm sorry.
If there's a specific need in the special ed area, I hope the school board will address it. Apparently, it hasn't. There really is a shortage. But it's the school board's job, and it has sufficient resources to allocate to those functions.
Thank you. The next question, this is for the superintendent. What percentage of the cost of special education is covered by state funding?
I believe the percentage right now is 27% is my recollection. 26-27%. That's down from about 43%, I think, at the peak.
Thank you. Next question goes to a school board member. Do we get less than state aid if we exceed revenue caps? Why are we not objecting to federal funds in education? Yes, to understand the equalization formula that the state uses, it is based on property wealth per student. We are a property wealthy district. For property wealthy districts like ours, if we spend above the average, and we do, because we have a very different student body that is the average in the state, we are penalized. We lose state aid for our students. The equalization aid is distributed on the assumption that every child costs the same amount to educate, which is not true for our students. There was a second part to that.
Well, actually, it was two different questions. The second question was, why are we not objecting to federal cuts in education?
We are. We regularly communicate with our senators and our U.S. representative of our position on issues that are before Congress, and we are part of various both state and national lobbying groups to emphasize the importance of federal funds. We've been no more successful at the federal level than we've been at the state level, unfortunately.
Thank you. The next question is for Get Real. Why don't you acknowledge the increase of limited English proficiency students, students requiring special education, and economically disadvantaged students as a major factor in increased costs?
Well, I recognize it as a major factor in increased costs. I think I would, though I'm certainly not an expert on it, I haven't researched it, I suspect that there is more money spent in that area and more effort devoted to that than needs to be. I acknowledge that it's a major cost factor.
Thank you. Next question is also for Get Real. Do you think that social workers and psychologists belong in schools?
No.
Thank you. Next question is for CARES, the superintendent, or a school board member. Which percentage of the MMSD budget goes to school referenda? If possible, give a breakdown for questions 1, 2, and 3.
Well, I can't do that math right off the top of my head, but in my recollection, I mean, the cost is the same. The cost for a special referenda is to get the polling places open and pay the polling workers. So no matter how many questions you have, it costs the same amount, but if somebody can very quickly divide 85,000 by 317 million, you'll get the percentage. I apologize if my math doesn't allow me to do that sitting here, but it's a very, 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 very tiny percentage, whatever that is.
Okay, the next question is also for the superintendent. Leopold was just remodeled in 2003. Did you consider the present new building to be adequate for the future?
Let me be sure I understand the question. The new building that's going to be built, we believe, serves that area for as far out as we can see. The addition was built with the intention of adding a new building. And the board actually voted, at the time we voted to do the addition, the board actually voted to build it at that time that we would go ahead with the second building there when the need arose. Leopold was overcrowded 5 years ago. We knew there was going to be considerable more growth. Anybody who follows that area of town knows what's been planted there and what's in the future for that area. So the addition itself was a planned, phased move to the second building, and it was built to serve as the bridge between those two buildings. So it is a planned increase.
Thank you. This is also for the superintendent. Is it true you don't have an actual budget to present to the school board?
That is not true.
Thank you. This is for a school board member. This may be a naive question, but are there any financial sources other than property tax to be used for Madison Public Schools?
Actually, we need Roger here for this. Yes. First of all, we get both state and federal aid. We generate, as the superintendent said, between
$6 and $10 million in competitive grants. We also have, well, there's a foundation which provides resources to our teachers for special projects. We have fees, and there are some other sources of income which, well, there are contributions, but that's not a significant portion. I forget. There's some other things that figure in. We get some, there's some small taxes, some more, I don't know. Art, can you remember what goes into that other revenues category?
There are, of course, Madison School Community Recreation yields a fairly substantial amount of dollars. If you think about it, the property tax of the revenue cap, which is $241 million, about 75% of that is property tax. And that's the only property tax that comes into the school district. So the property tax of the $317, $319 million is 75% of $241 million. So that's roughly, my recollection is it's like $160 or $70 million in property tax of the total expenditure we have, with the rest coming from state and federal grants, competitive grants that we get, various kinds of fees that come into the district. Sometimes the TIF district finally pays off and we get that money. So that's really where it all comes from.
Thank you. The next question is for CARES. Why is a Fitchburg addressed group working on Madison School District issues?
Because it's the Madison Metropolitan School District, and it's not just the city of Madison. Shorewood, Maple Bluff, town of Madison, and I believe there's a number of other areas that the Madison Metropolitan School District serves. Fitchburg does have it's broken into three areas, three school districts, Verona, Oregon, and Madison. And some of the people working on CARES do live in the Madison attendance area, but in Fitchburg.
Thank you. Next question is for Get Real. Will you or your organization commit to volunteering regularly as tutors for children in need so that the school district won't have to put extra money toward educating these children?
I can't commit my organization. I don't commit.
For CARES, does SAGE exist in Leopold?
It sure does. Leopold's 54% low income. Leopold is actually full SAGE, kindergarten, first, second, and third grade.
The next question is for the superintendent. Does question number two include operating budget for Leopold School?
Yes. There's no way. We believe that we can adjust within our operating budget to take care of its operations. The money that is in the question number two is to build the building, build the new building, do some renovations in the old building is all that is actually in and equip the new building in terms of chairs and desks and that kind of thing. But there's no operating money in there for the school.
Thank you. Question for Get Real. You refer to staff being fat. How specifically so? You question where maintenance in the past has gone. Are you implying mismanagement, manipulation, or funds or fraudulent behavior? Manipulation of funds or fraudulent behavior?
I guess the last one first, I guess you'd have to see your own implications in what I said. I think that the evidence is that the maintenance that was supposed to be funded from the previous referendum has not been done. And I think the other concern that I raised was that this referendum, and I believe the last one, were ambiguous or elastic as to what's required, what the money is required to be spent on. And that being the case, it amounts to a slush fund. I think there was an aspect of the question that I missed.
I believe Mr.
I hate to interrupt the flow of this, but I believe it's important that I respond to this because there's actually been two allegations about the use of the maintenance money, which to me is absolutely amazing because every single project is on our website with exactly where that project was done, exactly what was done there, exactly how much it cost, and whether or not it was completed. And these aren't things you can hide. If it says a new boiler was placed in East High School, you are perfectly welcome to go to East High School and look at the new boiler. Every bit of that money was spent, was accounted for, was looked at by our auditors. It is very public what it was spent for, and I absolutely cannot understand the continuing work at trying to say it wasn't done. Very obvious, very public on the website. Also on our website is the list of every project that was done in the new referendum. So all you have to do, www.mmsd.org, and look at the projects that were done. Go to our schools and look at the actual work itself.
In terms of what has or hasn't been done for the last, you know, using the money from the last referendum, I chaired the Long Range Planning Committee this last fall, and one of the reports that we received along with the recommendation to go to referendum for maintenance was a list. It's a small list, but was a list of projects that were supposed to be part of the first referendum that would not be completed and would be one of the reasons for the next one. So I need to disagree. I think what's on the website is a list of what has been completed. There's also a list of what did not and could not be completed with that money. Thank you. Well, it's six projects, but that's different than none, absolutely none.
For Superintendent Rainwater and the school board, will you bring the Allied Drive kids back to their neighborhood school, Leopold, after the addition is built, or will you continue to bus them across town?
The plans that are currently in work, and that's one of the things that the board is still working on through its long-range planning committee, is exactly how to deal with the Leopold situation when it passes or fails. There is not a plan to bring Allied Drive back to Leopold. Leopold has never been Allied Drive's home school. The plan is to continue that they would either go to Stevens, Crestwood, and Chavez, or Stevens, Crestwood, and Thoreau. Now they're Thoreau, Stevens, and Crestwood. So one of those two are the plans that are still on the table. Leopold has never been their home school.
Okay, we've got a slightly different question here. Someone said they'd like to hear from Laurie Cobbs and Ruth Robarts on these issues.
What in particular?
Well, I had to give my position often during the election, and my position is essentially the same as it has always been. On question one, I do not support the Leopold School, although I have been out of Leopold, and it is very crowded. That's absolutely true. It is very crowded. It is a wonderful school, and I can see why people would like to stay there, but I just don't support building another school on that same site. The operating referendum, I am supporting. I have been spending a lot of time on the budget issues. I can agree that the budget is not very transparent. It's not very user-friendly. But at this point, I'm not able to say that there's a lot of fat in there. Maybe there is, maybe there's not, but I haven't found it. And the third on the maintenance I do support, and I, for many of the reasons that were given here, is that I have an older house too, and I have another second mortgage that I use to pay for my new roof and my new windows and things like that, and I just don't see how that can fit me out from the budget.
On the website, www.schoolinfosystem.org, I've tried to lay out how I feel about all three of these. I think these are hard choices. I'm voting no on the Leopold referendum because I think there are other and better solutions to that, and I'm very uncomfortable with elementary schools being 1,100 kids, whether we call it two schools or not. On the maintenance budget,
As a school board member, I'm still not seeing the prioritization that I would like to see of the maintenance projects. It's hard for me to tell, looking back on the last 5 years and looking forward, particularly looking forward, what do we do if, you know, we have cost overruns, which we for sure will have. You know, so what is really the key items that need to get done? And I have some questions about what happened with our operating budget this year. The third one, I have 10 seconds. The third one is the hardest one. I think that we have not done our job in terms of going back to the building the budget around the kids, around programs that work and don't work. We have been very hands-off in terms of looking at curriculum and its costs, and very hands-off in looking at some categories of staff.
The next question is addressed to all the school board members, and the question is, how can a school board of loyal union members negotiate a contract with the teachers union without a conflict of interest?
I am not involved in negotiations because I have a health and life insurance policy from the days when I was a teacher, so I don't negotiate. I'm not privy to any information, any numbers at all.
I'm not a member of a union. I take my responsibility to represent the taxpayers of this community and the parents and children of this community seriously. When we go into negotiation with any of our employees, my emphasis is to do the best job of negotiating, to get the best contract from the perspective of the district and the taxpayers as I can. But I also believe fair and respectful. And I think that anyone who has children in the schools knows that we are dependent on the quality of our staff and the commitment of our staff. It's not about what we pay them, but it is about the respect that we give them for what they do. And we would not be the quality district we are without the staff. And that is not only teachers, but it's custodians, clerical, principals, even downtown administrators, bus drivers, etc. Thank you.
I was a member of NPI. I was on strike with NPI teachers in 1975, but I haven't been a member since I became a principal back in the early 80s here. I'm a former executive director of a nurses union for about 7 years. I don't think I have direct conflicts of interest. The kinds of things, and nor do I want to be unfair to our employees. They are certainly, our teachers are our most valuable, essential employees. What I have trouble with is I don't see, I'm on the other side now. It's my job as management to bargain as hard as I can for the kids and the community. And I see some things, for example, in the cost of the kind of health insurance we provide as things that we should be pushing much harder on.
Thank you. The next two questions deal with Leopold. The first one was not specified to anybody, but I think that someone will have the right answer, or a answer. Looking ahead to the next 5 to 10 years, what other schools besides Leopold will need expanding, which will result in further referendums like this?
We first of all believe that the new Leopold building will take care of the south part of the city. As you know, there is substantial growth on the far east side of the city across the interstate in what is referred to as the Sprecher neighborhood, but there are several other neighborhoods there. We believe that we will need to build a school there probably within the next 5 to 7 years. We already own land in that area to build that school. You know, that depends on how it rolls out, but I would expect within the next 5 to 7 years. The major growth in Madison is in our school district, and it is the potential for really major growth, is on the far southwest side, where our district starts at northern edge is Mineral Point Road. We go to Midtown Road and all the way out to Pioneer. It's hard to say. I think there'll be at least one more school over the next 5 to 7 years, but over the next 20 years, there will probably be an additional 5 schools, 1 or 2 middle schools, and a high school out there, because we're looking at 20 years out, probably 6,000 to 8,000 children in that area that I just described. So that's kind of what the future looks like, depending on the economy and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, you might as well hold the mic, Mr. Rainwater. This is the next question for you, too. If the money for operating a vehicle is not currently included, will the district have to come back in 2 years with another referendum?
We will not have to come back with a referendum for Leopold to staff it. And whether we have to come back for a referendum for anything else in the next 2 years, I certainly wouldn't say we would or wouldn't, but not to staff Leopold.
Okay, the next question is directed to all the school board members. It's kind of a multi-part. The first part is, how can specials teachers in art and music and Phi Ed be expected to maintain quality programs if class size is doubled or increased to 1.5 classes per specials class if question number 2 on the referenda is defeated?
I think that's one of my real concerns, and one of the issues that I am most troubled by, because I don't think that in the schools that we are talking about, these are some of the neediest schools, that we can maintain the quality of programming in art, music, and Phi Ed that we have had. I was at Mendota a couple months ago, and the teachers had put together a demonstration of doubling their first grade classes. And it was very clear to me that curriculum would have to change if that's the circumstance that we placed them in. I must say that the Phi Ed class that I saw, which was 32 or 34 first graders, and Mendota has a special brand, and they've got rollerblades. And here are all these six-year-olds going in, getting all the their knee pads, their elbow pads, their helmet, their rollerblades on, and zipping around the gym with very little concern about what they were crashing into. There were two adults in charge, and the kids were having a great deal of fun, but I'm worried about safety.
Yes, this is precisely why we, as a board, chose to do a referendum. We don't want that to happen, because the experience delivered to the students will be inadequate in comparison with what it is today. It's a very simple explanation. As Carol said, the delivery model of the curriculum will have to be changed, unfortunately, if teachers in those specials have to double up or go 1.5 larger. Unfortunately, because of state-imposed mandates regarding testing, we're being forced to focus more and more of our attention on those things for which we are held accountable through quantifiable measures, that is, the reading tests, the math test, the No Child Left Behind Act. These things are running counterproductive to the education of the whole child. This is something over which we have no control, and this is the very reason we are turning this over to you to make your decision to decide what kind of a school district you want with your children.
I think it's a very serious problem. The other night when we worked as a board on the amendments, we did not come up collectively with a big enough cut someplace else to offset that one. My concern is, I think this is absolutely the wrong process to be using, to be looking at cuts like that in isolation at the tail end of a process. I think as a board, we need to make decisions during the year about what are the most important contributors to the quality for our kids at every single grade? See with the community how to build the budget around it, and then see what things may be outside of it and still need a referendum. I mean, frankly, I'm very bothered by this was a year in which, we felt free to send $2 million back to the federal government, which we could use for curriculum materials and reading staff development time for some of our kids who are having the most trouble with 5 of our schools. But then at the end of the year, we have this other problem. I think we need a much more open process so you can tell us more about what you think of all the decisions.
Okay, we're down to our last two questions, and this first one is is for school board members, and this relates exactly to what Ms. Robarts was just saying. The question is, why did the district turn down $2 million in federal money for a reading program?
This is one of the more misunderstood situations. You have to understand that the money was dedicated to be used for a particular kind of approach that was to be used for all of the children at each of those five schools. We had a committee that was formed of principals and staff from those schools, and they said, this is not going to work effectively for all of our kids, and it's going to replace something that is working for our children. It's not money we could have used for other things. We would have loved to have it, to use it to supplement the programs that we have. But it was the decision, the recommendation of staff that this was not appropriate. My example is, if you're on a tight budget and someone offers you $50 a month for your food, and you could use it, you have five kids, but they say, you must spend all of that money on Fruit Loops. Would you take it?
Point. I didn't see any Fruit Loops in this particular situation. The truth is, we don't know exactly why, because President Keyes made a decision early on when I questioned it that the board would not investigate and discuss and have public consideration of that. The evaluator who was out here discussing with the superintendent what that money could be used for tells a very different story. And she says, no, she was not asking us to change all of our program. Since we never had a public discussion, I think you're left to guess what, you know, whether the truth is my version, the superintendent's version, Carol's, or something in between. But I think people were right to question it. It was not $2 million, period. It was millions of dollars over the next 4 years, two or three per year.
Okay. Can I give Mike a bill some
First of all, no formal request was made for me to investigate that. So let's put that on the record. This is the first I've heard of that. Second of all, in regard, you said you had all you wanted, in regard to grants, accepting them or applying for them or rejecting them is essentially the business of the administration and staff at individual schools. It is not the job of the school board to say to a school, you must accept this curriculum because we believe it is the right curriculum, even though you, the hired experts, the people that we pay thousands of dollars to, say no. We are not the experts. We are the policy makers. We are the people who fashion the budget based on the recommendations of the experts from the ground up. That kind of relationship must always be maintained. When I was a teacher, I did not ever want any school board member sticking his or her nose into my classroom. And fortunately, in my 31 years in this city, that never once happened. It may have come as a visitor, but never as an instructor. They knew that line.
Maybe since I'm the one that made that final decision, consultation with our principals and our teachers who had worked for about a year and a half on putting this program together, that we eventually rejected. Let me be clear that the final decision, and we made significant changes to our reading program in order to begin to try to meet the demands of the federal government. Very significant changes. They were asking us to script every day, and this is the final thing that we would not do, script every day for every teacher in the school district to teach the same thing to all of our children, regardless of where they are in their reading. If they're ahead or behind, the same exact instruction every day all across the school district. Our staff, our teaching staff, our principals, and our reading staff believe that is not the appropriate way to go. The programs that they were presenting to us that we had to adopt that did that, if we didn't change our program, have no zero data saying they're successful. We have substantial data saying that our program is successful. I felt, and I stand behind that decision, that the appropriate thing to do was to continue with what's best for our children at this time.
I think it's really appropriate that the final question is going to come from a student. As a fourth grade student who receives free lunch and participates in after-school programs through the Madison Metropolitan School District, why do you believe I shouldn't receive these services? And this is for Mr. Brown. Repeat that again.
What services were they?
Free lunch and after-school programs.
You want to read again for you?
No, that's fine. Basically, and these are my own views. I'm not speaking for people in my organization now, but that's really what's been asked for. I believe in an instructional form of education, not a therapeutic form. Things like breakfast specifically. Lunch, I think you have to treat a little bit differently, but I was asked about breakfast. Psychological services and things like that are therapeutic, not instructional. They take the place of the family rather than supplementing what the family does. And I think that education should be confined to education.
You mean only volunteering for those families and instructing those families so they don't need to put in those services?
And I haven't thought about that.
Okay.
Not my job.
Right now, we have time for both Get Real and CARES to make a one-minute closing statement. We're going to start with CARES.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Northside, for setting this up. It's been a very wonderful evening. There's a lot of approaches to closing tonight. There's a lot I want to say, corrections I want to make, information I want to provide. But I'm going to put the numbers aside and speak on what we truly believe. And that is that our children are our future, and they deserve to be given the best education possible. They need program choices and teachers who will help them explore and develop their potential. They are the generation who will care for us, and we must provide them with all the tools needed to succeed in a competitive world. The value of a home also is determined by the quality of the schools. Therefore, we must protect our community by protecting property values and providing workplaces with well-trained employees. Madison is one of the greatest places to live for a reason. Help keep our foundation strong. Keep Madison schools strong. Vote yes, yes, yes on May 24th.
I'm not going to rehash my view that there are sufficient resources already in the school district to do everything that the school district ought to be doing without a referendum, so I repeat my advocacy of no, no, no on all three referendum questions. I'm just going to do one correcting thing. Wisconsin statutes require, among other things, that the school board determine the course of instruction. How and what is taught is the job of the school board. They shouldn't be leaving it to so-called experts. This reading program was direct, that was offered was and turned down was direct instruction by phonics, which works, and it works across the board. The reason that it was rejected, I think, in the school district is because the teachers didn't know how to teach it more effectively.